This is The Takeaway with Tanzina Vega from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International, in collaboration with WGBH Radio in Boston.
We know one thing that's contributed to the opioid crisis in this country is pain. Severe pain. Chronic pain. Pain that's gotten people addicted and sometimes killed. Now, imagine an opioid that could relieve excruciating cancer pain or the pain that comes with surgery without the risk for addiction or side effects or slowing your breathing. Well, in a few minutes, we'll hear about one possible drug that might not be far off. But are new opioids really the answer? Or should doctors be prescribing any one of the hundreds of non-opioid pain medications that already exist? We turn to Dr. Keith Humphreys. He's an addiction researcher and professor of psychiatry at Stanford University.
So a lot of people don't realize is there are over 200 medications other than opioids that have at least some use for some pain conditions. So a big part of what we need to do now is just educate doctors better and also educate patients better that it doesn't have to be that, you know, when you're in pain, an opioid is the only option available.
And is that happening because people aren't aware that there are other options? I mean, or are they just being prescribed opioids haphazardly?
Well, you know, it's helpful as context to know that the typical doctor gets 7 hours of training in pain through the course of medical school. And as a comparison point, the typical veterinarian gets 50 hours of training in pain. So a lot of docs, especially primary care docs, don't know a great deal about pain. And what they know is what they've learned from detailers who come from the pharmaceutical industry, come into their office and say, hey, this new drug is great. And a lot of that marketing has been focused on opioids. In contrast, there's nobody coming in to market ibuprofen, which actually works quite well for a number of pain conditions.
So you mentioned ibuprofen, Tylenol. What are the other options besides, I mean, between that and an opioid? It just feels like such an extreme swing to have to take an opioid.
Yeah, there's plenty of options. I mean, here's a one that people who get gabapentin around the time of surgery are less likely to have persistent pain and opioid use after surgery. That's one example.
Is there a time when an opioid is not only the only, but the best option?
Absolutely. I mean, opioids are essential to medical practice. They're particularly good for acute injury. I worked in hospice for almost 10 years. They're absolutely essential for the management of cancer pain, terminal illness. So, you know, you wouldn't want to live in a country without opioids. There are poor countries where they have poor access and the amount of pain people experience is enormous. Where it starts to get dicier is with chronic non-cancer pain and for headache and bad back and a wobbly knee and those kinds of things. And, you know, for those kinds of conditions, usually the opioid, the people become tolerant to the effects of it and they don't get the pain relief anymore, but they do get the negative effects of an opioid, which are, you know, not just risk for addiction and overdose, but there's lots of other unpleasant side effects like constipation, oversleeping, like hormonal disruption. And some people, in the worst case, get hyperalgesic, meaning that they actually become more sensitive to pain than they were when they started.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I recall there being drugs specifically created for the side effects of opioids that you're describing. I remember a commercial for the constipation as a side effect. Are we creating more drugs than we need?
I thought that was a really interesting moment. I mean, we don't advertise opioids on television, but it's sort of a bank shot version of advertising by the pharmaceutical manufacturers is to advertise drugs that help you deal with the side effects of opioids, which is in a way advertising opioids. But yeah, you have to wonder at some point if the medicine is getting to be as bad as the disease for some people, should we not be trying some other kinds of options?
Well, and that's what we're talking about today, are new types of opioids that are being created. Tell us about those.
You know, opioids have three broad classes of effect. Analgesia, meaning they reduce pain. Euphoria, make people feel good. And then respiratory suppression, they slow down our breathing. And what a number of teams are working on around the country is separating those effects out by redesigning, you know, at the molecular level, opioid medications. So you could have an opioid that reduces your pain, but creates no risk of reduced breathing, which would mean you couldn't overdose. Or an opioid that reduces pain but doesn't create any euphoric effects. And what that would mean is that there's no chance of you getting addicted. And you can get these things to work in mice. That's an impressive achievement. And it'll be a question whether we can translate them up to the level of humans.
I'm curious about other forms of pain treatment.
There's lots of things, a lot of physical things that influence pain. You know, massage, yoga, mindfulness meditation. Some people do very well in cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, learning how your thinking influences pain. I mean, I'll use my own experience. I mean, I had a very serious injury and I was in excruciating pain. I needed multiple surgeries for a very long time. And one of the things that happens when you have serious pain is that you feel a little bit of pain, and it's very common to start to panic and go, oh my God, the pain's coming back. What happens when you do that? Your muscles all tense up, you know, you start getting even more pain. You go, oh, you know, here it comes, there's more pain, it's more distressful and all that sort of thing. And part of what I had to learn was how to change my thinking. So when I felt that initial start of pain, to not panic, to not tense my whole body and make myself worse. That's one of those things you can help people learn that is, you know, that is totally safe. There's no side effects to that. It gives people a better sense of control, and that can be very helpful. There's plenty of people for whom that doesn't work. Obviously, sometimes pain is, you know, due to things that can't be changed that way. But a certain amount of it is how we respond to it, how we think about it, how we react to it. And, you know, we should be teaching everybody who experiences pain how to use those tools.
Now, in this conversation, there is something that we're sort of talking around, which is marijuana legalization. Mm-hmm. There have been lots of proponents for that as a pain medication. Why is that not next on the radar instead of developing a new opioid?
You know, we have receptors in our body to which a component of the cannabis plant binds, and some of which are implicated in pain. And there's plenty of people researching that, and that's good. They should research that. But that, again, will put us back in that situation. Okay, now we have 201 medications other than opioids. How do you get docs to use them? That problem doesn't go away. And the other point to remember is that although we have, you know, states that have legalized marijuana, it seems to correlate with lower opioid overdoses. At the individual level, people who smoke more marijuana also use more opioids. So we haven't fully, you know, sussed out what's going on here. There's a lot of hype going on by people with on either side who have an agenda. But it's going to take really careful, you know, individual level experimental research, like for any other pharmaceutical, to see, you know, does this work? How well does it work? For whom does it work? All those kinds of questions.
Are insurers less likely to pay for alternative therapies to pain in your experience, or are they just all too happy to go along with the opioid prescriptions?
Yeah, unfortunately, insurers are very likely to cover just handing the person another bottle of Vicodin or OxyContin, and less likely, for example, to cover a course of physical therapy if that's what somebody really needs, you know, maybe, you know, 10 sessions or whatever. They, you know, often pay for the quickest, shortest thing. And also, they don't pay for doctors to spend a lot of time with patients, and oftentimes that's what's needed, you know, to really understand why is this person in pain and what is going on with them and are they getting the best care. I mean, a really good pain care usually involves multiple disciplines. So you have physicians, but you also have nurses and psychologists and people who are expert in rehabilitation to work with somebody to get them to a place where they can function. And, you know, that does cost money. But I would say it's worth it. I mean, pain is an epidemic in this country, like opioids. Addiction is an epidemic. We also have an enormous amount of untreated pain. People are suffering and they deserve care.
Dr. Humphreys, thank you so much for your insights.
Thank you.
Keith Humphreys is an addiction researcher and professor of psychiatry at Stanford University.